Okay. Saham soham nrinam kshula sukhaya dukham mahatgatanam viramaya tasya. His, for mitigation, entered into great distress for happiness very little of the human being, I, that. Okay. Okay. Okay, next. Pravartaye.
Pravartaye.
In beginning.
In beginning.
Bhagavatam.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam.
Srimad Bhagavatam.
Puranam.
Puranam.
Vedic supplement.
Vedic supplement.
Very clear, huh? Bhagavatam Puranam. Yat?
Yat.
Which?
Which?
Aha.
Aha.
Said?
Said.
Sakshat.
Sakshat.
Directly.
Directly.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
The personality of Godhead.
Rishabhyah.
Rishabhyah.
Unto the sages.
Unto the sages.
Okay, let's see how Prabhupada translates this now. Let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages by the personality of Godhead for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. Okay. And as you're saying, we are here with H.P. Swami, 1-808-319-1196, Chandramukhi Devi Dasi, Chris, Kandita Devi Dasi, Madan, Narahari, Narahari 1, Raghava, Ramananda, IMAC, Bernice Roberto, okay, ISKCON Hawaii, Madhukanta Das, and Mukunda Das. Okay, yeah. Okay, so I guess this kind of was a backup here. Go away. Then if I click over here, we should get the all-glorious database. And I'm always very happy to say that we sponsor this. So I guess maybe for the Christmas marathon, we get 0.5 book points. We get one small book point for every hit we get during Christmas marathon in the database. Is that that work? Yeah. Okay. So you're going to encourage people to read the Bhagavatam during during Christmas time. Okay. Oh Bhagavatam, oh Bhagavatam. Do 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 do. Okay. Okay. So here then is a little perspective. The Maitreya is of course in Vidura. This conversation is a lot of the Bhagavatam. No, tremendous amount of the Bhagavatam is this dialogue. Yeah. And the previous chapter, Vidura is just unloading, a tremendous quantity of questions, like that. Again, we always think about this as the Bhagavatam class and Sunday feast, and the Swami ABC finishes his class and says, any questions? And then somebody from the audience just starts reeling off, a whole series of questions like this. But enthusiastically, maybe he's like a, a 65, say a 50-year-old professor of philosophy for some local well-known university, international university, Harvard, Sorbonne, University of London or something. And he's asking questions very enthusiastically like that. And can you discuss this? Can you discuss that? Can you talk about this? Can you talk about that? And of course, the speaker's kind of thinking, my goodness, rubbing his hands together and thinking, okay, yeah, well, now that the Sunday feast, we'll take a little prasad, but right after the Sunday feast, let's get together, anybody interested, and then we'll go on to the next 5 days. You can come every day, and, because the idea, of course, is that by hearing this, is what the Maitreya says now when he, actual chapter break here, excuse me, the great sage Maitreya said yesterday to Vidura, the royal dynasty of King Puru is worthy to serve the pure devotees because all the descendants of that family are devoted to the personality of Godhead. You are also born in that family, and it is wonderful that because of your attempt that the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are becoming newer and newer at every moment. Yeah. So this is again the qualification of the audience like that. So today, what are the qualifications of, you know, +1-808-319-1196 Chandramukhi Devi Dasi Chris Kandita Devi Dasi, yeah. And then Maitreya said he's becoming very, very happy to hear all this. He's becoming very enlivened. So sometimes we know we can never talk about Srimad Bhagavatam in this manner unless we had an audience which was so good. You know? The audience actually, you know, pulls the message. You might say Krishna's in the heart, Bhagavan. You know? And when the audience is so good, even though the speaker is a fool, you know, a demon, like Hiranyakasipu, Vishwanath Chakravarti sees this, he sees all the demons speaking all this terms, glorifying glorifying Krishna. So this is the situation, no, very, very nice, you know. And where are they sitting? You know, are they sitting in a, you know, a McDonald's, you know, at a small table with kids playing in the things and people? No, they are, where are they seated? You know? The picture we have in the Bhagavatam is a very, very nice environment. Nayatra hangsa nirmanti yushikshayaha, you know, places of natural scenic beauty. You know? Prabhupada says that these Europeans and Westerners, wherever they have gone, have made very, very nice parks and gardens. And he says without these, it's not possible to, it's not possible to develop the finer tissues necessary for understanding spiritual life. You know? You know? So the Purport will talk about this, I think, too, some more. But very, very nice situation. You know? And of course, before, they've already discussed asarga, visarga, you know, why in an ontological reason the Lord and the living entity can get into Maya, you know, yeah, and that, then very specific questions about everything, probably structure of the universe, so many things like that, which we'll see all the way through the fifth canto. You know, can you describe the shape and structure of Bhumandala? Somebody asks that. And with the islands and all these things, and then that shows up. You know, he does it. You know, way in the fifth canto. You know, so we're setting up the questions right now. You know? And I was, again, these are very practical questions, because at this time it seems that, of course, the interplanetary travel wasn't so restricted. You know, right now it's interesting because here in Nashville, Tennessee, where we are, Greater Nashville, Tennessee area. Last year was one of the coldest winters ever recorded. You know, I had to, you know, knock the ice off of my car to get to the lock to work to open the door. And they didn't issue a curfew, but people were driving around after, you know, it was time to get home from work, and everything else were kind of looked at with like as madmen or something. It was so slippery, everything. You know, and now this is the exact opposite. This is the hot, warmest winter in so far in the recorded history of the area. And so I go out in the afternoon sometime for a walk, you know, about 2:30, something like that. And it's okay, you know, I haven't got to put a heavy coat on. I put my coat on and stuff like that and warm, and if the clouds don't come over, it's okay, it's tolerable. So we can still move around in Dwarpara Yuga. And maybe understand the whole Bhagavatam is being produced at that time. Very important point, huh? In terms of cosmology and Visarga and Sarga and the Manu creation, you know. It's all being carried on during the Dwapara Yuga. So let's understand this. You know, don't try and understand it in terms of what it describes as the Kali Yuga itself. And so you can still get around a little bit. It's cooling down. It's, you know, it's a little bit difficult. You've got to kind of pull yourself together, you know. But when the Kali Yuga comes, when the real winter sets in, then you get like snow. You know, you get snow up to a certain point where maybe you can't even see, you know, 20, you know, 30 feet in front of your face, like that. Yeah. I can't help this. Every now and again we hear this term bigger, and Prabhupada uses the term bigger in terms of land size. And the Mayapur project was 9 biggas in the region. So I looked it up there. A bigger is one. It's different. It's all over Asia. Different countries use different sizes, even different states in India. But in Bengal, it was traditionally about 1/3 of an acre. The British fixed it. So therefore, the original Mayapur project was actually started off at being 3 acres. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So different measurements, different things. So maybe you can't see more than 30 feet in front of your face. You know, this is happening. So this is the environment. So asking about the structure of the universe and different planetary systems, it's not something like asking about quasars or, you know, these nebula galaxies and this totally impersonal, distance, meaningless, human scale, meaningless things. These are things that people can still get around. They can experience astrology. They can experience astronomy. When Maharaj Yudhisthira was there, he performed the Rajasuya sacrifice, and the common man could see the demigods, like that. Of course, the common man then, now, is probably, you know, extremely uncommon man now, you know, yeah. So this is the ambience, and then he's talking about the answer to all these questions. A very natural answer is the Bhagavatam, you know, yeah. Because he's asking about the pastimes of the Lord. So he says, now I'll start talking about it. So he says, let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavad Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages by the personality of Godhead for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of little pleasure. So this is one point to me, because for some time in the Bhagavatam classes in San Francisco and Berkeley, you know, we're in San Francisco still, yeah. In the beginning, before I was even initiated, this thing came up that there's much more suffering in the material world than there is pleasure, you know. But I was hitting on this point that this is the world of dualities. When you turn away from Krishna, you turn away from everything. We enter into a kind of comatose state within the body of Mahavishnu, existing there, okay, you know. And then he creates the illusion. He gives us sodium pentothal or something so we can, you know, get out of our paranoid schizophrenia or whatever it is. And then we see dualities, you know. Yeah. In the mathematics, you made this point, it's called a zero-sum game. This is Morgan Stern and von Neumann, the theory of games. Yeah. This is a game where we all start off with 0 points. Okay. So after 15 minutes, if I have 100 points, you know, that means that somebody else in the game has to be minus 100 points or some combination. So the same with Socrates in the Phaedo, when he was taking the ankle chains off, he was rubbing his legs and saying, oh, that feels good. He said, but why does it feel good? Because it's a relief of distress, you know. Okay, so you can push the distress, you can fast, you can, you know, you stop breathing, you can give up your personal psychological identity, you know, so many things for so long. And then you let go of the thing and wham, it swings to the opposite side and you have an identity like anything. You can have powerful, refreshing air and breathing in your body, and you can, you know, enjoy eating. Okay. But that's it. You know. The Nectar of Devotion says the same thing. It says a little bit. You know, the material pleasures that we get are temporary and they're superficial compared to the soul, you know. So the thing he says here, that this is being spoken by the great sages, by the Lord himself, which he'll explain that, to the great sages, you know, for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. So the sages, you know, wouldn't exactly be entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. So extreme miseries, I think, is just the fact that we're separated from Krishna. And then that's an extreme misery. All the happiness and distress, Dhruva Maharaj did not want to enjoy the results of his pious activities. You know, another form of distress. Okay, so here we are, in extreme misery, having turned away from Krishna. You know, and then we're in extreme misery, we're kind of fiddling around with some, you know, puppet on our, a little doll on our table or something, you know. Yeah, happiness, distress, you know, very superficial. And of course, so the sages are maybe pretty much liberated from this. They're vimukti gyanis, yeah, and becoming the point of being devotees, yeah. And so then, but it's being spoken to them for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme misery for the sake of very little pleasure. So compassion, you know, compassion is a very, very natural result of purification. You know? Somebody can be a bhajananandi for his own benefit, but in some respects, even ourselves, maybe bhajananandi nature, is that you want to share what you have. This is kind of some evidence of the soul. You know? There's no compassion in physics. Physics is an attempt by many people to understand everything about the material nature. What is the origin of life? What is happiness? What is the universe? Everything. Some people think that by physics, you know, the way it's now composed, or how it will develop, you know, from the way it's composed, they can understand everything. And they think there's no ethics or morality in physics. You know, that's something else. You know? Or else they generate some kind of mechanistic system for generating moral values. You know? But Charles Townes, this Nobel laureate who we're working with, he says truth is a very moral value, right? You know? And if you talk about that, then he says science is dedicated to truth. It's actually diminishing apparently a fair amount compared to what it originally was, you know, 40 years ago or something. You know? But in general, that's the idea. You know, is everything has to be not only like you can't lie, but whatever you say has to be verified by other people. Referee journals, you know, repeatable experiments, everything else like that, and so on. You know? So, you know, everybody's trying to understand the world from different ways, you know, and what is the origin of life, what are these things. So the sages who are receiving this message, well, what can we talk about them? You know, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. You know, very, very naturally, you know, it says in Maharloka, or whatever, the three higher sagacious planets, that they experience no distress except for compassion for those in the lower worlds like that, and so on. Yeah. So this is very natural then to relieve their distress. They want to hear things that they can generate, they can give to other people in such a way they can distribute them, and so on. Yeah. So as much as understanding the content of the Sankirtan, the content of the Bhagavatam, it's also understanding how to be able to distribute it. You know, you can say that everybody is a Sankirtan devotee or a potential Sankirtan devotee. Maybe some people, okay, Shantaras, we need that. You know, the grass and Krishna's flute are in Shantaras. We're not going to be chastising Krishna's flute. Hey, buddy, this is a Christmas marathon. You know, why aren't you out on the street? You know? Now, everybody's in a different humor. You know, when you right during the Christmas marathon, you need books, you need clothing, you need all these things from the devotees that are out like that, the strikers, you know, out there, yeah, so on, yeah. So we should, it's a Sankirtan movement, Christmas Sankirtan movement, and pushing ourselves to expand our ability to personally get the books out, to sacrifice our desire to get a few books out, to be able to help other people who can get four times as books out as both of us combined if we help them, you know, like that. Yeah, so it's very, very nice. It's a very Sankirtan oriented text. Then he says, then after that, what he'll describe now is how Sanat Kumar and everybody else, they inquired from Sankarshan, okay, and Sankarshan's eyes opened a little bit, okay, they had come from the highest planets, okay. And Sankarshan began to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? And Sanat Kumar then spoke this to Sankhyayana Muni. Right? He explained it as he has heard it from Sankarshan. So what he's saying is true. It is being directly spoken to the sages by the benefit of, from Mahavishnu, from Sankarshan. So this is a very interesting Bhagavatam. You know, he said this is the Maitreya Muni, this is how he's hearing the Bhagavatam from, I think he says, next he'll say, Sankhyayana Muni then spoke it to his spiritual master, Parashara, that my spiritual master Parashara and Brihaspati heard it. Okay. The great sage Parasiva, being so advised by the sage Prahlashya, spoken to me the foremost of the Puranas. Okay. So Parashara, who's the father of Vyasadeva. So a little bit of parampara for this Bhagavatam. And again, the Bhagavatam, it seems like it's not a specific collection. What Bhagavatam means is to take references from authoritative sources and put them together to produce in the audience, you know, the bhava, you know, necessary to appreciate Vishnu. And so how high the Bhagavatam goes. Our Bhagavatam goes all the way to the gopis in Vrindavan, and indirectly mentions Srimati Radharani, like that. Yeah. Okay, so now if we go to the actual purport here, which is loaded with perspective, okay, let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavad Purana purport. So Papa says, the sage Maitreya proposed to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam because it was especially compiled and traditionally comes down in the disciplic succession, compiled anthology in the disciplic succession for the solution of all the problems of human society. Okay, all the problems. Anybody here have problems? Raise your right hand. Okay, I can see you all. Raise your right hand. Okay. Yeah. Anybody here have problems which are causing them distress every day? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yes, the disciplic succession. The actual Bhagavatam, the verses, is actually not very big. If you probably a lot of you, everybody has seen it. I think it's about, what is it? It's about like one volume of the original Bhagavatams that we have, you know, first BBT Bhagavatams, the first canto was in two volumes, like that, I think, yeah. So just one of those would be sufficient, maybe even more than that, I think, maybe even like half of that, you know. If you put it like in, you know, 12-point type, would be able to handle the entire Bhagavatam. So it's being compiled and in disciplic succession. It's not that it was just compiled by Sukadeva Goswami, or Vyasadeva, but Prabhupada is adding more things. You know, and what is he adding? Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary, other commentaries like that, which Prabhupada is including. He's including Bhagavad Gita. He's including Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he's including things in our Srimad Bhagavatam includes things which occurred after the, you know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. So it's being compiled in disciplic succession. We should go on compiling it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And of course, at a certain point, when somebody very, very powerful acharya, he may again, who knows, again, in the next 10,000 years, but there may be another Bhagavatam being compiled, which was necessary, depending on the time, place, circumstance. Maybe it'll be a smaller one, Briha Bhagavatamrita, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, like that. You know? So we should go on compiling it. You know? Yes, okay, come down in disciplic succession for all the problems, solution of all the problems in human society. Aha! Only one who is fortunate can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And who's the goddess of fortune? Okay. Krishna taba punya habe bai, e punya koribe jabe, radharani kushe habe, druviata bola tomatai. I say to you emphatically, O my brothers, you will only obtain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna when Srimati Radharani becomes happy with you. So we've got to pronounce the Hare very quickly, very clearly. In fact, there's a very, very nice verse in Vrindavan Das Thakur's thing there. We can get that. No? Okay, well, we'll come back to that later maybe. Okay, I'll make my notes here. Okay. Okay, only one who is fortunate, who has the mercy of Srimati Radharani, can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees. Okay. So I remember hearing one time Prabhupada said there are third class, second class, first class pure devotees. And he said, well, actually, the third class of pure devotees are not actually pure devotees. Yeah. But Majjhimadhikari, initiated Brahman, ISKCON, who's following the process properly, na sochati, na kangsati. He doesn't hanker, doesn't lament, he does his art, does his service, you know, preaching, puja. You know? And he sees everybody equally. He may fight with people this, that way a little bit, but basically he's always likes everybody in his yatra and stuff and gets along with them, you know, well enough. Okay. So that he's, okay. So we're reading today, I guess, in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya in the morning. Actually, we read Chaitanya Charitamrita before Mangala Arati. It forces us to get up earlier and earlier if you want to read more. Okay. Then that there are two kinds of pure devotees. One is the pure devotees who are self-realized, and the others are those who are dedicated to becoming, you know, purified. They're also considered pure devotees in good association. In the Nectar of Devotion, Dhanadhar Maharaj says the actual translation there is, it's not exactly sadhana bhakti sometimes, but it's those who are kind of like in the level of bhava or something. That's also, well, not sadhana. They're also sometimes entangled in the reactions, but they're liberated, maybe like dhruva. So a variety of pure devotees. You know? Some are still going through the motions of their external karma, but are very liberated at heart. And there's some who have to have the mercy of the spiritual master to keep from falling down. You know? But when they get a little mercy, when they get, you know, they accept the spiritual master through their temple president, through different sadhus and so chastisements and corrections and raising of eyebrows, okay, then they accept it. Oops, yep, I've got to watch out. I shouldn't be reading that. You know, okay. Yeah. So, variety of pure devotees. Only one who is fortunate can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees. Under the spell of material energy, the living entities are entrapped in the bondage of many difficulties simply for the sake of a little bit of material happiness. Okay, many difficulties. Yeah. They engage in fruitive activities not knowing the implications. Now they engage in... And this is the same thing again Socrates says. He takes his, what do you call it, ankle iron. They take the ankle irons off so he won't run away. And then he says, we should always, he said, if they ever made a god of happiness, he should actually be a two-headed god. The god of happiness, distress. Yeah, very clever guy, Socrates. Yeah. So he said, whenever we're happy, we should think, okay, distress is on the way, yeah. And whenever we're suffering, okay, my boyfriend jilted me, or let's just look at the other side of the thing, my girlfriend jilted me, okay, or else mommy betrayed me, or something, you know? Yeah, whatever it is, whenever we're in distress. You know, then we should be thinking, Socrates says, happiness is on the way. Yeah? And whenever we're happy, we should be thinking, distress is on the way. You know? They engage in fruitive activities, not knowing the implications. Because it's another way, Prabodhananda Saraswati in the Mahimamrita, he says, Vrindavanda Mahimamrita, whenever we see good food and good drink, we should think, ah, this is the beginning of all my problems. Good food and good drink. The beginning of all my problems. Yeah. Yeah. And so we want to honor prasad, you know, to fine-tune our body, to improve the tissues, you know, so we can appreciate the subtle character of spiritual life. Under the false impression that they are the body, and thus under the false impression that the body is the self, yeah? The living entities foolishly relate to so many false attachments. They think that they can engage with materialistic paraphernalia forever. Yeah. This gross misconception of life is so strong that a person suffers continually, life after life, under the external energy of the Lord. Now, so many things to discuss there, no? If one comes in contact with the book Bhagavatam, as well as with the devotee Bhagavata, who knows what the Bhagavatam is, then such a fortunate man gets out of the material entanglements. Aha, liberation, mukti. Therefore, Shri Maitreya Muni, out of compassion for the suffering men in the world, okay, here he is, he's a sage receiving the knowledge, proposes to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam first and last. So remember that word's in the word by word that says first. It says first and last. So maybe it communicates that sense, like now, but I mean now forever. Okay. So that's Prabhupada's purport. So many nice, you know, things in these purports, discussion different areas. But maybe somebody has some specific comments, you know, questions. I guess we could go on talking for 7 days and seven nights, you know, if anybody would stay around. So, koi prashna hai?
Okay.
Preguntas, comentarios?
All right, I've unmuted everybody.
Narahari tiene que hablar en español.
Sí, yo tengo una pregunta.
Madre Chandimuki es de Perú, so tiene que hablar bien, o va a ser, ella va a sonreír.
Pero la otra gente no entiende.
Okay, she speaks English. She speaks English good. Actually, she's a teacher of English. She teaches English, yes.
Maharaj, two questions.
Okay.
So in the beginning of your lecture, you were referring to Socrates was the one when he took off the ankles, the shackles, then he said, oh, that feels good. Was that because you went through it so quick?
Yeah, that's Socrates. There's many dialogues, you know, and I've seen devotees quote a couple of them, but the Phaedo is the very last one. Yeah. And it's easy to get it, you know, translations. And I personally, I think it's very nice to read, especially if you're preaching in this kind of atmosphere when you can quote Socrates and stuff. People think, oh, and educated people, they know it. So the Phaedo is the very last one, and the almost the whole thrust of the thing is the existence of the soul. Is there a soul? Is there a self? Are we immortal? And it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, you know. So it's very, very nice. All the arguments, logical arguments that Prabhupada gives are there. So it's called the Phaedo, F-A-E-D-O. And nice, entertaining, nice to read, and you can cross-reference it with the Bhagavatam left and right.
What do you think that Srila Prabhupada means at the end when he says, speak the Bhagavatam first to last, or first and last?
Because Alpha Omega, I am the Alpha, I am the Omega, is that it's where we start off for liberation, you can take it that way, and it's where we're going to end up in terms of Gopi Bhava.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever you want to talk about, this is it. You know, Chaitanya Charitamrita is nothing but a Bhagavatam class, right? Yeah. All these things, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That sounds right.
Yeah, I would agree on that. I was just studying the verse in the where Sukadeva Goswami says in the 12th canto, one who with undeviating attention constantly at every moment of every hour, as well as one who faithfully hears even one verse or half a verse or one line or half a line, certainly purifies his very self. So I was trying to think, you know, what does that really mean, the one who constantly recites this literature at every moment of every hour? And my conclusion really was the same as what you just said. It's not that we're specifically quoting the Bhagavatam or reading the Bhagavatam, but the conclusion, the siddhanta of the Bhagavatam, what we gain from the Bhagavatam is always talking about Krishna, hearing about Krishna, preaching. It's all really Bhagavatam. I mean, Krishna is none different from Bhagavatam. Krishna Katha is none different from Bhagavatam, no matter what aspect of Krishna consciousness we're speaking. So I would agree with you, you know, full-heartedly that really is the meaning of always speaking Bhagavatam. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're quoting an exact verse or a particular story from the Bhagavatam, but the philosophy of Bhagavatam, which is Krishna.
Even, for example, if you've got a job selling shoes, I guess maybe somehow or other, involves leather. Okay, this, you're selling clothes. You're working at a garment store. Yeah. And maybe you're managing a garment store. Okay, therefore you got some reasonable money coming in. And you're figuring, you're talking to your employees, you're talking to the managers about what's selling. You're actually reading fashion magazines. You know, you get some choice in what you have in your store and stuff like that, even though it's a franchise. Okay. And you get a percentage, you know. But you're talking about this stuff, and the back of your mind is, okay, boy, we're going to make some good profit on this time. But you're thinking that because you really like to go to the temple, and you're a business guy, and you like to give nice donations to the devotees of the temple to pay for this, to get the bathroom, which is dying in the Brahmacharya Ashram, refixed, you know, to give some donation against the books. The books can go out at, you know, 2/3 of the price. So that's a sense I've also heard is... It's like the bhava. It's not just the actual, even what you're even thinking about, but in the background of it all, it's right there at heart. Is that you're kind of what's coming popping up again is this feeling of what it's like to be able and go with your wife and just to talk to the president and say here's our donation, you know, for the month for the temple, and see his eyes light up, you know, and thank you so much, Prabhu, you know, so on. Let's reciprocate a little. Hey, everybody, so and so gave this and that. So this is the devotees, you know, their reciprocation and hearing the Bhagavatam and stuff. And that's, you know, the bhava, you know, at every moment. You know, yam yam bhapi smaram bhavan. You know. Under the impression of the bodily self, of living into these foolish relate, false attachments. You know, they think that they can engage in the paraphernalia forever. Wow. Yeah, very stupid intelligence. Somebody, you make yourself so stupid, you know, by drinking beer that you forget the fact that your wife is waiting to knock your block off for having lost your job for being a fool, you know, that you're running up a bar tab which you can't maintain. Okay, so you make yourself so stupid that the conversation you're engaged in right now with somebody else at the bar, you can think that it'll last forever, you know, like that. You know, and this bodily concept. So the bodily concept, again, is the bodily concept in the mode of goodness, bodily concept in the mode of ignorance. You know? And as we head towards goodness, then we can start to appreciate all these things. Then we can hear the message of the sages trying to give us. Yeah. Yes. So it's continually life after life. Yeah. Yes. Come in contact with the book Bhagavatam and the person Bhagavatam is gone. Yeah. Unfortunate, get out of the material entanglement. Yeah.
Jai Maharaj?
Yes, yes.
So there's some very sweet, interesting facts about Srimati Radharani in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's been described that though Shukadev Goswami, he had this one verse, Radha Nama Prachanena Murchita Sanmasi Kobavet, that if he had mentioned the name of Radhika, he may faint for 6 months.
Yeah.
So though he could not directly...
Where does it say that? You're an erudite fellow. Where is that thing about the 6 months and him being the parent?
This verse was quoted, I believe... Is it in Padma Puran?
Ah.
It may be quoted in Padma Puran describing the glory of... Because there's a whole section describing the glory of Braj and of the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. Even Jiva Goswami uses it in Gopal Champu to resolve so many things.
Yeah, okay. Gopal Champu.
So this also was mentioned that Bhagavatam is written in what's called Vyanjan Vritti. It's like, Parokshvadam Vyanjan Vritti means like saying something indirectly or poetically.
Okay.
So what he did was he took so many ways to describe Radhika indirectly, since directly mentioning her name would maybe have caused any udipan or stimulus for him to not be able to continue to speak. So it's described that certainly in the verse, Anya Irarito Nunam Bhagavan Harishra, in this verse, in 10th canto, very closely, almost directly mentioning by name. But indirectly also, everywhere he is written the word bhakti, because everything is personified. So Bhakti Devi also has a form.
Ah.
The form of Bhakti Devi is Radhika herself.
Okay.
There's no separate form of Bhakti Devi like you have, you know, Brinda Devi, Purnamasi. There's so many different expansion forms, but the actual form of Bhakti Devi is Radhika herself. So where bhakti is glorified, it indicates directly Radhika. And also, you know, the 10 categories of Bhagavatam are mentioned, and the last one is called Asraya.
Yeah.
So it's written that Asraya here means Krishna as the ultimate shelter of everything, but it also means, according to Rupa Goswami, Asraya Jatiya, which means the category of love, the repository of love, because in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami described Vishaya Jatiya means the object of love, who's Krishna, and Asraya Jatiya, or the devotee, who's the repository of love. So the greatest devotee, repository of love, is Srimati Radhika herself. So Bhagavatam's ultimate conclusion is Asraya Jatiya Tattva, means ultimately the conclusion about what is the glory of Radhika's praying. How great this her love is, why Bhagavatam was written, to show how great her love is. And this is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Majjhava Lila chapter 8, verse 88. The direct statement of what the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam is. Very beautifully written.
2888.
Majjhava Lila, chapter Ramananda Samvad, chapter Majjhava Lila, chapter 8, text 88 is the verse for proving this point.
It's kind of like 666, but it's 888.
Yeah, right. Actually, you're right. I never thought that. Yeah, exactly, 888.
Mnemonic devices. Okay, yeah, remember that. Okay, Ramananda, discussions with Ramananda Roy. Woof. Wow. Thank you. And here also, something now. Can you see our screen here? Can you see the Microsoft Word?
Yeah, Prabodhananda Saraswati.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, this is the little flowers of Hanuman, flower number one. This is Vrindavan Dham Mahimamrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati, translated by Kusha Kratadas. Okay, and these, of course, are these are all Shatakas, which means 100, you know, and this is Shataka 15, verse number 73. Okay. What's happening here? Okay, there we go. Okay. So, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, it was an incarnation of Tungavidya, who's on the far left, if we're facing Radha and Krishna. And Tunga means the peak, or the top. She's the peak of all knowledge. Okay. I shall tell you a mantra that is hidden from all the Vedas, and is not manifested anywhere in the most confidential scriptures. When a person chants this mantra, the great spiritual perfections, siddhis, come before his feet. Wow. And the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead stand in his hand. I guess you don't have to go to work if you got this mantra. For a person who chants this mantra, there are no orders or prohibitions. Got to get from Mangalarti, Prabhu, you know, whatever, you know. Yeah. For a person who understands the dust of this mantra's lotus feet purifies they who know the rules of the Vedas. The person who understands the dust of this mantra's lotus feet purifies those who know the rules of the Vedas. This mantra is the sweetest nectar. It is the auspiciousness of all auspiciousness. It is filled with limitless wonderful glory. And it is available for $2.95. At YouTube. It is the attainment of all attainments. So the Sanskrit for this must be really wonderful. Yeah. It is the ultimate goal of all goals. It is the wild bliss of all wild blisses. They say it is the secret of all secrets. Without thinking of anything else, day and night, chant this mantra, Radha. Very nice, huh? And when in London, in Radhastami festival, Prabhupada says, Radhe, Hare, no difference. So we are chanting this, you know. So basically go on chanting. Where is it here? Without thinking of anything else, day and night, chant this mantra, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Okay. This mantra is a flood of sweetness. Flood of sweetness. I like sweetness. This mantra is a flood of sweetness churned from the sweetest nectars. Wow. I guess makes heroin look like dog food or something, you know? Yeah. It is a precious flood of this wild sweetness of the bliss of pure love. This must really push Kusha Karada to the limit. I'm trying to translate this. Yeah. I like his translations in some ways, as far as I understand, even talking to him, there are many inaccuracies. He himself accepted it. Yeah, not that many, but some, you know. But his feeling and everything else, I've in some ways I see surpasses other people in many ways like that, you know, so on. O fortunate one, who understands us, who understands the meaning of this mantra that is a flood of bliss flowing into the heart. So this is what we have, the Maha Mantra, you know, going out on book distribution. We were talking, you know, every morning we're online, we have a start meeting online morning program with Mangal Artik and everything else. And one of our members there, what's her name? Yugala Kishore Dasi. She's a Sankirtan girl in Peru, in the buses, everything else like that and so on. And we're talking about this, you know, and just telling her that when she goes on the buses and stands up and appeals to the people, you know, so on, she can tell everybody, I have some books about my boyfriend here. Okay, if you want to be a gopi, or else you can say, I have some books here about my my girlfriend's boyfriend, you know, yeah, like that. And that's what they are. All the books we're distributing, they are, you know, it's very difficult to find any book of Prabhupada, I think, which is not going to give like an indication, you know, of this ultimate goal of life like that and so on. So from first to last, he's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. But I think we're going to find that he speaks mostly about, like it says here, liberation from distress. Yeah. And that certainly seems to be, you know, something at this point which is interfering. You know, happiness and distress are interfering with my development of the Sankirtan that I'd like to do, that the Sankirtan that I'd like to take with me to my next life even, like that and so on. So therefore, taking the Bhagavatam just as liberation, even if you don't understand what it's saying, sometimes we're so dull, so tired, just turn on and listen to it. And you see, I don't understand it, but boy, it's just, if the sound is going on, the sound is in the background, the sound is keeping my mind occupied, it's liberating me from happiness and distress. Okay, we make it through maybe to a little higher mode, you know, and when we can profundize our Krishna consciousness more, where we can appreciate Bhagavatam, but even more and more, more profound levels like that, at every level. You know? Okay, so any final questions or comments here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for giving class.
Oh.
I was shocked a few times when you kept reading my phone number, like, why did he keep reading my phone number? And then I realized you were like, reciting off who all was in class. It was anyway.
Secret. Okay.
You kept saying, or you said, if I'm happy, I should know that distress is on the way, and if I'm distressed, I should know happiness is on the way. What can we do to mitigate that? If we get, I mean, instead of being happy, can we just think, I'm just being neutral to this pleasantness that's going on now, or what? What do you recommend?
No, of course, the recommendation is make sure that the puris get from the, you know, the wok to Radha and Krishna's plate hot. Like that. You know, the solution is to enhance your gopi bhava, or whatever your transmittal form is. The solution is different on different levels, no? Maybe somebody is on you know, Prema Bhakti, somebody is on Bhava Bhakti. You have to know. You've got to know your level. Dosha Da Sadhu Sangha, Raganuga Bhakti. And as much as you can, of course, engage in devotional service. And then the happiness and distress in the material world, you know, like again, we're getting good food. Oh my God, I had this miserable food and I get a nice feast and you know, I've been, you know, my body's in good condition to relish it. But we're thinking, even though it's prasadam, and I guess it's mostly prasadam, some of the things were bought outside, but they don't have meat, fish, or eggs, okay, you know, like that. The ice cream, okay, yeah, yeah. But we're thinking, I'm relishing this in some degrees in the bodily concept of life. I'm forgetting that it's prasadam. So let me look at this as prasadam. This is Krishna's mercy, and did Krishna accept it? I know some temples where the Sunday feast is cooked by congregational members, and everything in the kitchen is vegetarians. There's a devotee, even not in there all the time. Devotee will come in and get the fire started, maybe, and that kind of stuff. And maybe if a fire has to go on, they won't even be there to light the fire, you know. But and some of the people, you know, are eating chicken, and so on. So this is when they're not there, you know, so on. So there's this discrimination, because then the question, quite questionable, whether or not, you know, the Radha Krishna deities are accepting that. You know, maybe they're accepting other things, you know, something the nectar and the and something else, the baked potatoes, but they're not accepting the rice and stuff cooked by that consciousness. So are we taking, is it really prasad? You know? And so relishing the prasad like that and asking who cooked it and all these kind of things, then we give up the attachment to the happiness, you know. And if we give up the attachment to the happiness, even though maybe we'll eat too much, because we try our best not to eat too much, but so many tricks we know, everything we know, but in the end, our body, you know, the conditioning, eats too much, and then we have acid indigestion afterwards, like that. You know? But when that happens, because we were detached from the happiness of enjoying it, we have intelligence, we're jnanis, we think about what Socrates said, okay, you know, and so we try to avoid the happiness which is being pushed upon us, which is material happiness. Then when the material distress comes from, you know, that, then we also don't identify with it. We can tell our donkey, our body, hey brother, did you learn something from that, you stupid ass? And it's a fact. Our donkey did learn something, and our donkey next time will be less inclined to do that, you know, so on. And, you know, probably right to the very end, we're still going to be riding on this stupid donkey right to the very end of our lives, you know, pretty much a little bit, you know. But, again, it'll be superficial, and it won't bother us at all so much from our main business. And finally, when the donkey has just got gone, you know, then you know, won't see it anymore. So it depends on your level, but at least we can intellectually, you know, think about it, a little time and chant and like that. Then beyond that, of course, the best thing is to increase our service. And automatically we'll see the material happiness and distress for what they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so good luck with your donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Maharaj.
Thank everybody for your association, and I guess we'll get back to our Christmas marathon.
Chai.
Muchas gracias, Maharaj.
By the way, we have Christopher right here. What does Christopher mean? It means lover of Christ. Theodore means the worshiper of Christ. Christopher. We wish you a Merry Christmas, Christopher. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Haribo, Haribo, Haribo.